You're listening to Trot the Egging, hosted by John Hetherington, working with Widnes Rugby Union Football Club, sponsored by Boydells. This week's rugby story is that of a proud Yorkshireman who has moved around a bit and sampled a couple of cultures already in his young years, with a big move on the horizon. A West Bowen and Siddle junior, he always felt the need to prove himself and put a marker down of his own. He's had spells with St Helens, Junior Catalan's system, Yorkshire Carnegie, Old Broadlands, Yorkshire Rugby Union County, Yorkshire Rugby League and England 16s. He set Super League alight at Huddersfield Giants and represented England Knights. A fine young fella. Ladies and gents, Mr. Will Price. Follow, like, share, subscribe and endorse us via Facebook, Trot the Eggin, Twitter at Trot the Eggin / at John Heath, Instagram Trot _D_Egg_In, YouTube Trot the Eggin, LinkedIn, John Hetherington, and Spotify, Trot the Egg In.
Oh, well, how have you been, mate? Okay.
Yeah, really good, mate. Just getting back into the swings of thing now, week 5 of pre-season, but yeah, really enjoying it. I'm feeling really good and healthy, so yeah, I'm good, mate. Thanks.
Happy days, good man. So before we get stuck into your rugby story, where was home for you as a kid and who lived with you?
I grew up with my mum and dad and my little sister, who's a few years below me, right. In Bradford, in a house in Bradford. Okay. Lived there till around 8 or 9 and then moved over to the south of France when my dad signed for Catalan at about 8.
Yeah.
And we lived there for, lucky enough to live there for 3 years in Canet, St. Cyprian, which were beautiful. And then come back home and lived in Bradford ever since, and kind of born and bred Bradford, grew up here, so yeah, it's that's been on for a long time.
Right, and we'll talk a bit more about it in a bit, mate, but how was it adapting as a kid going to France? Did you find it easy, or was the language barrier difficult? Or
no, it was, it obviously, looking back at it now from being like as an adult, it's kind of an experience that I wouldn't change for the world. Obviously, when I was younger, leaving all my friends and family over here and moving over, it kind of seemed quite daunting. I moved to a full French school, so no one spoke English there. I couldn't speak French, so the first year or so, it took quite some adjusting. A lot of hard times, I had to get tutors and kind of got stuck by myself in that sense. But no, I loved every minute of it looking back, and it's one thing I wouldn't change for the world, and really an eye-opening experience looking back at it now of seeing a different culture, a different lifestyle, and you know, knowing that it's nice to have a change every now and again.
Yeah, so mate, you probably took for granted a little bit as well, mate, wasn't it, being a kid? And yeah, that's just one of them things, isn't it?
But, yeah, definitely.
So obviously rugby's in the blood, isn't it? But where and how did you find rugby, and where was you introduced to it, mate, club wise?
Yeah, obviously, like you mentioned, it's run through the family. My dad plays, both my granddad played, my uncle played professionally, so it's kind of in the family. I joined a club called West Bowling in Bradford when I was around 5 years old, and played there up until I left to France, and then played for a junior club called Chess Catalan in France, which were kind of like the feeder team, you call it.
Yeah.
France, and played there for the 3 years that I was over there, then came back and rejoined West Bowling, and then joined Siddle when I got to around 14, and then finished my amateur days there.
Right, mate. So we'll touch on why that happened in a bit, if that's all right, mate.
Yeah.
So if you can remember back, obviously 5's young, what was the process at that age? Because was there a bit of tag, mate, or was you obviously had to play a year or so above yourself at that age?
Yeah, didn't
you?
Obviously I was young, I was a year below. So I played a couple of games a couple of years above myself.
Yeah.
And I played mostly the year above myself until they were an age group for myself. But West Bowling, it's a massive club in Bradford. Probably, in my opinion, the biggest club in Bradford, amateur-wise. There's not many clubs that compete with it in every single age for junior level.
Okay.
There's different junior clubs, but they don't have a club quite... There's not another club that has teams from 5, 6, 7, 8 onwards. So, obviously, playing a year above myself when I was young, and then managed to make lifelong friends that I'm still mates with now, still speak with regularly now, that I've played with ever since I was 5 there. So, yeah. We're it's a great club and one that I love a lot.
Yeah, I think rugby is pretty good at that, regardless of the court, mate. We're like lucky with that spot, aren't we? They'll probably be your mates till you're in the pub drinking stout or whatever, won't it, mate?
Definitely,
yeah, so you're on that. So When you moved to Catalan, how old was you? Eight?
I was eight, yeah.
You come back at 10 or 11?
Yeah, I come back at 10. I was turning 11 just before my first year of high school.
Right, so what's the school system like over there, and is sport part of the curriculum, mate, or is it something you had to go and find?
I think obviously because I was only in primary school, we didn't do much sports within school. Obviously, we did sports as in PE.
Yeah.
But quite a lot of people that I went to school with played in the same rugby team as me. But they were obviously, it were a bit different. I was playing in a team. I can't really remember why, but I was playing in a team, I think it were a year or two above myself over in France, which were really tough because you get into 9, 10 and there were some kids that were massive, and I'm only small now, and I were a small kid, so that were quite tough. But I played for that same team, and there weren't that much sport within school. Just outside of school, there were football teams, and rugby league's massive in the south of France, obviously, with it being the home of Catalan. So, I were playing every Saturday, Sunday, tournaments, and the tournaments over there, they go on for hours and hours. You start at 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, you don't finish till 5, because obviously they have the 2 hours in between the days where they stop everything for lunch and...
All right, okay.
A siesta, they call it, don't they? Yeah, so we had obviously... Yeah. And I had that throughout school. So we got to school at 9. I'd be home for 12. Spent 2 hours at home every day, or you'd stay in school for them 2 hours and you just chill, have your lunch. And then you go back...
siestas in witness, mate.
No, I'm over here. Go back to school till 5. But yeah, it was a great experience, like I mentioned before, and it was a lot different to what it is over here.
And as a kid, are you seeing... Other than the size, Will, are you seeing much difference in the rugby? Because I don't want to answer it for you, but as a kid, you just play, don't you? You love it, and whoever's in front of you is in front of you, aren't they?
Yeah. I don't think you can really assess it that much when you're playing at that young of an age, obviously. Looking back at it now, there's some great players that I played with when I was younger that I played against at international level at under-16s. When I played for England, there were kids in that team that I played with when I was eight, and there's a lot of kids playing coming through at the Catalan system that I've played with when I was young, which is obviously a madness, but you can't really tell it, obviously, at that age, who's going to make it and who's not. You're obviously too young, so you just get on with it, like you mentioned, and you just get down and have fun with your mates.
Right, so the time comes to come home, mate, and you're that age where, would you have come back to year 6 or year 7, Will?
No, I came back around the end of that 6-week period as you leave primary school, so I came back just before I started high school.
All right.
I went straight back into high school, yeah.
Yeah, so you missed the whole, would there have been a town team at Bradford at your age? How old would we have been? Under 11, sort of? Under 11,
I'm not too sure, mate. I couldn't tell you. I don't think they will have been.
Right. So how did you find the transition coming back and going into high school from the foreign school?
Obviously, it's massively different. It's massively different for anyone going from primary to secondary. But obviously, getting used to being back in English lessons and learning how the curriculums are a lot different, and learning a whole language were basically my focus for 3 years. So if they weren't much learning beyond that, it was just learning how to speak another language and learning how to basically live. And when I came back to high school, it was tough because you're learning properly now, and you've missed probably 2 or 3 vital years of school where you're learning a lot of stuff and you're moving forward into growing as a child. So obviously it was tough coming back in and learning more and more in English lessons and getting dropped in and out of sets and moving up sets, moving down sets, being good at some subjects. But no, it were good. It wasn't as tough as it was probably for my sister, who was struggling to read and write in English because she'd had to obviously grow up in France. So I was quite lucky in that sense.
Yeah, probably come back and you threw you into German as well and didn't even put you in French.
No, yeah, I had to do a French GCSE at 16 by myself in school. They didn't do it. I had to do it by myself in a classroom, so that was a bit different.
Fair enough, mate. So you're back at West Bowen, are you, mate, at this point? Yeah. So what's the standard like of school rugby to club rugby?
Well, we didn't play much school rugby. They weren't really a rugby team. I remember playing a few games in year 7 and 8. Obviously for that school year, and we got pumped, mate, obviously every week. There weren't many rugby players in my school. I don't think there were
bizarre, really, innit?
My age, it's hard, but I played a couple years above myself in school for some teams which had a few more rugby players in, but compared to club rugby, they were not at my school. Compared to some other schools in Bradford, they were all my mates that had got to the same schools and different schools that had played. So they were nothing compared to the rugby we played at club level.
Right, and was there any union around then, and would they attempt, did you anyway, or?
I think I started playing union when I was around 13, and I loved it, mate, to be honest. I loved the crack, I loved the game. I didn't mind the differences between rugby union and rugby league. I just got on with it, and obviously you enjoy it, and the club that I were at were a really good club in Old Broadlands in Halifax, and it were a right club. We made national cup finals, Yorkshire cup finals, and I started playing a bit of union then and stopped when I got to around 16 when I joined the academy at Huddersfield.
Right, so when it got serious, mate. Yeah,
it got pretty serious, yeah.
Right, so for people that won't know, mate, Gaz Widdop's club that as well, isn't it? It's Old Broadlands. So they beat the Wid, who I've played for a couple of years ago in the National Cup. They did, you know, just before lockdown.
Yeah.
But it was a good game. So at that age, what position you playing rugby league at that point, mate?
I was playing mostly halfback. I don't think I played many fullback games when I were in amateur.
Yeah.
When I got to start playing union, I started playing a couple of games at 10. And then I started playing a couple of games outside back at 13.
I was going to say that. I think I could see you at 13, really.
Yeah. Then I started, I played a lot of 12, kind of like a second receiver.
Yeah, so not the crash ball. So would you like your outside centre?
No,
yeah.
Because the lad who played outside centre at my club were great at them outlines, and I were probably better out back playing with the ball a bit more. So we kind of found a really good rhythm of me playing 12. And a lad called Tom Inman, who plays, he was just signed for Halifax, he come through at Warrington.
Right.
He's at Halifax Panthers now, but he played 10 and I played 12. Yeah. And that were really good fun.
Just me being nosy, really, Will. So how did you find playing the game tighter to the ruck rather than wider to the ruck? Did it give you time, or did your footwork give you time? And have you always had that footwork?
I think obviously as a 10 year, you're generally like a bit more of a 7 in league. You play a bit more as a scrum half. So, and that's never really been my game. I've never really been an organiser or someone to start throwing big, massive, fancy passes or drawing into the line. I'm well known for my footwork, but that's something I'm trying to develop into my game now, is my passing game. But obviously playing at 12, it gave me a bit more running time and a bit more running space. I got to take on
the line. What you see.
Yeah, essentially, basically, instead of just passing at 10, which I kind of really didn't really like.
Yeah, and defensive roles, mate, which did you prefer? Because you're not shy of your defence side, are you? Which really...
No, I think at 10, you defend a lot more than you do at 12.
And bigger lads as well, innit? Yeah.
When I were younger, you're defending a bit more at 10. And but at 12, it was still quite tough, because the 12s that I were playing against, the one 12s like me, they were like an extra middle.
Yeah.
They were playing as in, like, they were running the big crash lines.
Yeah, and the platform setters.
It were a bit different, but it's something I got used to. And when I played union, I loved it, playing week in, week out. I really did. I loved it.
Yeah, if you wouldn't play 13 for me, I think I'd play your fullback for Broken Field. I wouldn't really want you to kick the ball. I want you to play what you're seeing.
Yeah.
Usually,
I'd love to give that a go. Yeah, union.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? It'd suit your running style, definitely, mate. But not that I'm an expert, by the way. But do you know what I mean? But I just think the way you play in Broken Field, you'd be deadly in rugby union. I'm shocked that no one's tried to tie you up, which we'll talk about in a bit, if that's all right. But How competitive are West Bowling in your local cups and your national cups? Are you competing?
When I got to about 11, obviously you start playing a bit more competitive. You get a league and you start playing national cups. So we were always in the first division. My first season back at West Bowling, we was in the second division. I think I played 3 or 4 games and we got promoted straight away. So we was in the first division playing against top teams, tough players that play Super League now. So we did always did well in the league. We never won one. We came second when I got to around 13. We was always in top four. And we got to, I think the best we did in the cup was the semis. I were about under 12s or under 13s, and then we didn't really enter many national cups, so I didn't really play in many cups, but the league we always did quite well in.
Yeah, I suppose you can be happy at that as well, because you're competing, mate, aren't you? It's not like you're just straddling on to playoff. You're actually, you're challenging, aren't you? So as a kid, I think although you might not be winning it, or you can accept that you're up there. So through school, mate, how did you find school? Is it more social for you, or did you quite enjoy the theory side?
To be fair, it were a bit of both, really. My friendship group at school, I'm still really close with now, my best mate. He's been my best mate since I was 11, and, you know, we've been best mates ever since. And obviously, I'm 20 now, so it's a long time, nearly a decade.
Yeah.
But I'm not actually that bad at school. I managed to pass all my GCSEs. I think that probably come down to my dad. He kind of gave me a bollocking if I didn't do well in school, and always made sure that I would behave in school and getting on with it. So I didn't really mind it. I didn't really hate it. I enjoyed going and seeing my mates and having a laugh, but I didn't really mind doing the lessons either, which were kind of a win-win for me.
Yeah. So when did your ability start getting noticed, Will? And was that what enforced the move to Siddle, maybe, without being rude?
No, so to be fair, I was still at West Bowling at the time. And then I managed to get a trial at Saints. I think my dad spoke to a couple of people there at Saints and just said, look, give him a chance. I'd only had one scholarship offer at 14. I only got the offer from Wakefield.
Right.
I think, you know, it was tough. Obviously, it's tough having, obviously, my dad behind me, and people knew me for that reason. And
yeah,
I had minor interest from clubs like Castleford and Bradford when I was around 14, but no one really gave me a chance. A lot of question about my attitude as a kid. You know, I think that kind of reflected off my dad. He's known for, in the rugby community anyway, for being quite a natural player. He didn't train that hard, but when he got to a game day, he turned it on. So yeah. I think a lot of people thought I'd be the same. And at 14, 15, I was nowhere near the same player as what my dad is. Well, my dad was at that age. And there's people the scouts that had been around him as a kid and me as a kid. And I think they kind of overlooked me in that sense. And I didn't really have much interest. I signed at Saints when I was 14. And I think I did 6 months there. And then they said they had Lewis Dodd.
Yeah.
He's playing Super League now, and they had him, he's the year above me. So they said, look, we've got this kid who's fantastic, and rightly so, he's absolutely killing it in Super League. He's won a grand final, and, you know, Doddy's one of them players that I love watching, especially, you know, as a fellow player, just love watching him play. So they said, look, there's no real pathway there for him into the first team. If he's got interest elsewhere, or he can go somewhere where he's going to play week in, week out at scholarship level, go take it.
Right.
And that's when I got a phone call from Andy Kelly at Huddersfield, who said, look, they took me on a talent transfer, so they'd been and watched me play rugby union at Broadlands.
All right, okay.
They had a few players that I played with at Old Broadlands playing for Huddersfield on a talent transfer.
Right.
They signed me that way, and then I started playing playing for Huddersfield that way, but I didn't really have much interest as a kid.
Yeah. You know what's mad? It's like, at your age there, you've seen both sides of rugby, haven't you?
Yeah.
So you've seen decide what it takes to play at that level, which you've clearly had, and unfortunately they've not judged it on you, have they?
Yeah, I suppose
that early stage, and that must have been difficult to shake off. And then you've seen the business side as a young lad. So how did you take, was it difficult, Will?
I think obviously as a kid coming through, like at 14, when the only hope I had really in life, I wasn't really bothered about any other job. I didn't enjoy much else apart from playing rugby. My weekends would be filled with rugby. Every day after school, I'd be coming home, watching rugby. If I didn't have school, I'd go to training with my dad and watch it from that aspect, and go watch him train at professional clubs. And I think it kind of drove me a bit more. I had people who questioned me a lot as a kid, and I had scouts that weren't really interested. People said I had a bad attitude, and I think that kind of fueled me into wanting to work harder as a person and prove people wrong. Obviously, I guess it works out now, because I've managed to get into the opportunity I'm in now, where I can say to Saints, I could see where they were coming from, and I kind of thank them in a sense that they didn't lead me on. They just wanted me to play as a kid, and that's something you've got to appreciate, definitely. But I think my focus was, as a kid, was just to prove people wrong. I was sick of people probably saying I wasn't as good as my dad as a kid, which I'd get off players I was playing against at 14 on an amateur day. They'd ring, as you do when you're playing. And I had probably people thinking I wasn't that good. And to be fair, at 14, 15, I wasn't a massive impact on teams. I want one of those players you'd look at as a kid and think, wow, he's ridiculously good. I just enjoyed playing, and I enjoyed turning up week in, week out. I enjoyed training. And, you know, all my mates played for the same team at bowling. One of my best mates, Dad, he was a coach at bowling. So it was quite tough when I left there. But I wanted to prove to people, you know, that I was good enough.
Yeah, and there's no wrong going somewhere where no one really knows you for you. And yeah. It's just a fresh start, mate, and whatever comes is because of you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whether it's good or bad, it'll be on your actions.
Yeah.
So you've had to shake that title off virtually all your playing life, haven't you, mate, from a kid? And how do you go about doing that? Because no matter where you look, and you'll probably have, like, whoever your dad plays for, you'll have a top, won't you? And you can't help your surname being Price, can you?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And like, how do you get away from that and deal with that? Because I didn't want to put you on a spot, really, but you'd have had a target on your head playing, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Simply off your name, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I think obviously a lot of the coaches who I played against at amateur level will have known who my dad was. They'll have watched him play regular Super League, and they'll have probably mentioned me in team talks before games, or, you know, I remember playing games and I'd be getting peppered from everyone, and people would just be trying to smash me, or I'd get smoked off at ball. People would be giving you stuff. Parents sometimes give you stick sometimes, which were rare, but it could happen. But I think a good thing where I just didn't ever really want to shy away from it. I think I was quite proud to be his son. I am still proud to be my dad's son, and I think, you know, he wasn't just the rugby player Leon Price. He was my dad, Leon Price, and outside of rugby, he's taught me a lot of stuff along with my mum. You know, they were great role models for me as a kid, and they still are now. I learn so much from them day in, day out. But I remember my dad saying, look, you've got to just outwork people. You've got to outwork them. And I think it's something I've kind of had instilled in me now. I always want to try to be the fittest. And I think growing up, I've now, to the stage I am now, only past 2 or 3 years, I've been able to do some stuff on the field that I've managed to do now in terms of my skill and my own ability. But I remember when I was younger, just wanting to outwork everybody, wanting to be loud. I remember being just trying to talk all the time in games, not giving people stick, but just talking as in calling plays, being loud, talking defensively, attackingly. And that kind of just instilled some confidence in me and being myself. I'm quite a confident person anyway. I'm an extrovert. I like talking to people. I like meeting new people and having general conversation. So it was good just being myself. And he just said, look, you've got to prove people wrong, that, you know, you are as good as I think you are, and I am as good as I think I am. And that was something I kind of carried through my whole career, and I am doing now.
No, that's a great attitude, mate. So what was you like in a new environment, Will, in a new team? So you've gone from Saints to Huddersfield, which is a big jump, isn't it, mate? A big change.
Yeah.
On your club level, you've gone to a new club to challenge yourself and show it's you. So how are them new environments that you've just said there? You're happy to talk to people and get to know people, and you're open to challenges, obviously, mate, which we'll talk about later on. But is it a difficult situation for you initially? And are you going to these places as a halfback?
Yeah.
So you need to be vocal, don't you? And,
yeah. I remember going to Huddersfield, and I knew obviously the lads I played with at Old Broadley and at Huddersfield, so I managed to mingle. When you're a kid, it's easy to make friends. I'd say, you know, you're young, you can get along with anyone and everyone. So, and a couple of my mates outside of school, just people who I'd grown up with, they played at Siddle. So, and I'd played against these Siddle lads since I was 6, 7, so you know each other, you hate each other because you try to kill each other every weekend when you play. Once you meet people and you get to know people and see people outside of rugby, you create friendships and bonds. And the new environments for me, I suppose it's just something you've got to try and take in your stride. You've got to be open and be open to meeting people, speaking to people, getting to know people. And I'm happy with doing that. I like meeting new people, like I mentioned. And, you know, it's tough. You can be scared. I remember just thinking it were the best things for me. I remember thinking, look, if I want to have the best shot at making something out of this, I've got to just give it everything I've got. I want to enjoy my rugby at West Bowling. I remember I was just slowly, I got released from Saints. I was sad. I was upset. You know, I was angry at not being given an opportunity, I suppose. And I was probably I always try to prove people wrong, and I'm a competitor, so I wanted to be a I wanted to play competitive rugby week in, week out. And I suppose at West Bowling, that were the coaches, Martin Tordoff, who's one of my mate, my best mate's dad. He's a great guy, and you know, they made rugby enjoyable for me for a very long time. And I suppose at 15, 16, I wanted to start winning. I wanted to start winning trophies.
It changes, mate. Yeah.
I wanted to play in national cups, which I wasn't playing at West Bowling. I wanted to play in Yorkshire Cups. I wanted to win. I wanted to compete at the top of every league. So I think that were just a big reason in me moving to Siddle and me having a change of mindset, I suppose.
Yeah. And you touched on before, so was the decision ever put to you? It's league or union, or was that just a decision you took?
Well, when I got to 16, you obviously get your contracts to play.
Yeah.
To sign academy, and I was lucky enough to get a contract at Huddersfield, and I'd just come off the back of playing for England at under 16 level, so I'd got through to the England squad. And I got a contract offer from, was it Yorkshire Carnegie? I think they've gone bust now.
Yeah.
But when I was younger, they were still playing in quite a high division, I think. So I was playing for Yorkshire Carnegie at county level. I was playing for Yorkshire at county level, and then I was playing for Huddersfield as well, at a scholarship and academy level. So at Huddersfield,
busy lad.
I was playing. I was playing Saturday, Sunday. You'd be training 3, 4, 5 times a week. So it was just what I loved. But at the time, rugby union weren't paying for kids to sign on at 16. Whereas rugby league, you sign your academy contract. You're now a professional player. You sign your professional contract. So I think that was one thing. I wanted it to be my job. I just left school. I needed to obviously have a source of income and have money to get around and. But yeah. I think obviously growing up around league, I knew league a bit more. Oh, sorry, mate.
You all right?
I knew league obviously a lot more than I did union. That was probably the main reason why I chose league than union, because I've been around it so long and obviously my dad's played.
Yeah. So do you mind if we go back a little bit then, mate? Sorry. So what's the process of selection for national, regional, area? Players, can you talk us through that or what you remember about it, please, mate?
Yeah, so what I can remember was you'd play obviously for your amateur club and then the club, I think, put forward, or the selectors had come put forward, and you'd go and play for your regional county. So I'm from West Yorkshire, so I play for West Yorkshire, and then you'd play against Central Yorkshire, East Yorkshire, North Yorkshire, South Yorkshire, and you'd play against all them. And I think it was once every month, and they'd be pretty big games. There were a lot of people there. There were obviously a lot of kids there. And you'd play 15 on 15. I think it were like 40-minute matches, so you'd be there all day. And then ended up getting selected for Yorkshire, which is your region. So I played for Yorkshire, managed to get selected for Yorkshire Carnegie, which were playing for them every couple of weeks on an amateur basis, and then obviously the selectors came to try sign players to play professional and sign a professional contract, which is where some players sign, some players don't. A bit similar to academy, I suppose. And then that's when I went back to league.
Right, and you'd played for England 16s in rugby league, hadn't you, mate?
Yeah.
So is the process very much similar? You'd play for your club, you'd play regional, wouldn't you, mate?
Yeah, it's pretty different in that sense. I think when you're getting selected for the 16s, you go do fallout sessions. So your professional club, so mine was Huddersfield, will put forward, I think it was 5 or 6 players to go and do these England trials.
Yeah.
And there'd be every single club would do that. So there'd be like 60 lads there training. Okay. We did it in over in West Park in Leeds. We were all in Leeds, sorry. And you do, I think you did, I think it were 5 or 6 sessions over the space of a couple of months.
Yeah.
And then they selected the England squad for the France game. So that were how we ended up getting selected at, and I were lucky enough to end up getting selected for that. But I remember training quite well in them sessions. I remember it being tough. We used to do like a Yorkshire v Lancashire game at the end of every session. You'd do 13 on 13 and you'd kind of drop yourself in as kids. And I remember doing pretty well in them games and being lucky enough to get selected for that team.
Do you feel a definite lift in standard, mate, when you go to them sort of things?
Yeah, obviously you're playing against the five or six best players of the best teams that they're in. So you'd have players from Saints, Wigan, Warrington that you'd be playing against who were the best in their team.
Yeah.
And you, so you're playing against, at your age, the best of the best. And, you know, the team we had at 16 for England, players like Matty Nicholson, who's playing at Warrington now, Kane Robb, who plays regularly for Castleford, Bailey Hodgson, who's over in Newcastle in Australia,
yeah,
who played for Castleford. You've got AJ Wallace, who played, who were at Leeds, and he's now he's killing it at championship level for Bradford. And there's loads more players that are playing championship first team. So, yeah, they were, it were a high standard team. We had a great team, and the players that I played with there, I still speak to now on occasion. So, yeah, it were a great experience.
Well, at this point, mate, at both courts, you're playing elite, aren't you, mate?
Yeah.
Virtually elite at both courts. What did you find most or least transferable between the two sports?
What do you, what, like the similarities?
Yeah, so what did you find worked in both courts, and what did you find you had to tweak in the other court? There might be nothing, mate, because of where you played. It's very similar, isn't it?
It's quite similar, yeah. And I think for me, obviously growing up around rugby and being, and obviously rugby's just me. I've always loved rugby. And quite a natural player in the sense I've got good footwork and I'm quite fast and I know how to play with my, with a ball. So I think that were quite similar in both courts. I think just the technical sides of both games are a lot different in terms of rucking and not giving penalties away.
You didn't get involved in the rucks, did you, mate?
Like, sometimes when you're in that position, you got to just do it.
You just got to,
A lot of times. A lot of times I'd be standing too tall and I'd just get jackled straight off the ball or come in from the side and not know that I was doing it illegally, or I'd hit someone around the chest in a tackle, which is fine in league, and they'd be like, right, no, you're hitting too high, it's a penalty. And stuff like, it's just stuff like that, like obviously the intricacies of different games that you have to get used to.
That's a great word. That's what I was going to say. It's the little intricacies, mate, isn't it? It's the dark arts and stuff. So for listeners and viewers that might not know, if you're playing at six or seven in rugby league, you're defending usually outside your centre, aren't you, mate?
Yeah.
So in rugby union, you're in the heartbeat of the action at 10 and 12 defensively. As the game shifts, you'll virtually be in and around the ball, won't you?
Yeah.
Both sides of the ball, just in case people didn't understand that well. So with you, with you choosing rugby league, mate, and was, although you got the offer from Huddersfield, is anyone else sniffing? Are he offering anything, or was it always going to be Huddersfield anyway?
No, I think at that age, you have the club. So say if you play for Warrington and you want to, and you want, and what, and Saints want this kid from Warrington, they've got to pay a fee of 10,000, I think it is, for insurance or something. I'm not too sure. Right. But they, so they've got to pay, and they want, I don't think any club would have wanted to pay 10k for me then. And like I said,
sure they would now, wouldn't they?
I'm not too sure. But yeah, it's it were a lot different when I was 16. So when Huddersfield offered me the contract, I was lucky enough to get a bit more extra money on my contract because I played for England, and our class is probably a higher standard of player compared to the lads that had not quite made that squad.
Yeah, elite player, mate, without being rude, isn't it?
Obviously, with all due respect, it's what your name falls under in the category, obviously.
Of course it is.
So I just chomped at the bite and went straight for the contract. And obviously, after being turned away at Saints and kind of seeing that, you know, it's not all sunshine and rainbows, and, you know, you got to take the opportunities. I just took the contract straight away and I were happy to do that.
Well, people can open doors for you, Will, but you've still got to walk through them, haven't you, mate?
Yeah, definitely.
So, how is it 18th Academy, first team? There was no reserve for you, was there?
When I was there, so it was when I got to Academy, it just changed to, so you'd be 17 and 18 playing Academy.
Yeah.
And then anything above 18, where you'd have to be in the first team or else you
won't. Okay.
Or else you wouldn't be playing, basically, because they scrap reserves off. But I think I played two games, and then by the time I played two games in Academy, we COVID it. So we went straight to COVID for my first year of Academy. So, it were basically just them two age groups.
Okay, mate. And what happens for you during COVID? Because that, it can't have been nice that at an Academy level, can it? Because your future is out the back. You've not, without being rude, that year a lot of people developed, don't they? So you've not been able to prove yourself, really. Did they let you take gym stuff on? Did you go and do personal sessions or?
No, that were more for the first team. I think I remember being in the academy and not doing anything at all within Huddersfield, but I think that was just the genuine thing for every club everywhere. You couldn't train, obviously.
Your sound's gone off, Will. Yeah, there you are, mate. Yeah,
so it was just training. If you did any training, it'd have to be at home. And when I got to, I think
within the hour, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, within the hour. When at my old house where we used to live in COVID and where we live when I grew up, my dad bought me a Smith machine, so I had kind of like a gym set up in my garage, which were lucky because obviously not many people have that. Yeah. And I remember just you have to find stuff to do and to keep you from being bored, I suppose. And that year or so being in COVID when I didn't do any rugby at all, I didn't see anybody from Huddersfield, we didn't train. I just remember training by myself, and there were a field about a minute walk away from my house, a rugby field around the corner, and I would I'd go up there nearly every day and do my own little bits and do my running and training by myself in the gym. And I think I kind of put on a lot of size. I think I remember that COVID time being probably the reason why I ended up doing so well when I came back into the academy. I think I lost all ability to go and play rugby week in, week out, which you kind of take for granted. And I remember my dad saying to me and kind of talking to him and being like, when you go back and play, be happy to be back and playing and take the opportunities you get, because you don't get them your whole life. And when they get taken away from you, you understand how hard it is without it. And that was probably the reason I kicked on so well when I came back into the academy set up at Huddersfield.
Yeah. And as much as, which if you talk about now, if you can, but how lucky had you been with injuries? Because if you'd been unlucky, that give you the time to fully repair, mate, didn't it? And it's like a new signing then when you go back, isn't it? So how would you have been with injuries?
Well, touch wood, I were lucky enough to not have any major injuries, and touch wood to not get any in the future. And I've not had many really, but I suppose, you'd use that time to rehab yourself, and you could do that type of stuff realistically at home, your rehabilitation, your exercises. But I was lucky enough not to have an injury at that time. And my body would just kind of, I suppose it kind of grew. I kind of put on a lot of weight. I put on a lot of bad weight, and then it kind of trimmed all back down, and you know, kind of go through that stage of puberty where you get a bit bigger and a bit stronger. And I kind of just progressed as I grew into my body a bit, really, at 17, and put on a little bit more size through training at home and eating a lot more and being at home a lot more.
Yeah. Was there a time when you went back when you felt you'd arrived at all? Was it easy going back?
So, well, I didn't go back into academy training. So when I had actually. We'd been training with the academy for, I think we started back in November of that year, for 2020. Yeah. And then by January time, I got called into the first team. But when I went back into November, I remember doing fitness tests and that. And like, I think the club record at Huddersfield for the 1.2 Bronco test is Ollie Russ, and he's got 4 minutes 26. And I think I came back I'd just turned 18 and I ran it in 4:27. So just off getting his score. But I remember feeling I was flying. I felt fit. I felt stronger. And my rugby felt a lot better. And I think that's probably when I kind of grew into me as I am now. Obviously, I made my debut that season. So
you felt you'd arrived at that point, when you're hitting them numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So does that genuinely make people lift their eyes and go, this lad's ready?
I think so. I think obviously when I was fit, I was running fast scores, I was running fast. And I think the way I was training hard, and I was kind of trying to become a leader in the academy. I was trying to I wanted to be in the leadership group. I didn't get the chance to be in that group, but I wanted to kind of prove that I was good enough to be in that group. And I remember when I started to play rugby, a lot of stuff were coming on. I was breaking tackles, breaking lines, and a lot of stuff were paying off, probably from just hard work, being at home and training a lot and kind of thinking about rugby a lot. And I think it just being back on the field was just exciting for me again, and I got excited again.
Yeah.
And that's probably kind of the reason I got lucky enough to go and get into the first team and start training in that pre-season in January.
So how does going from honing half-back skills at club, at elite, playing for England, which, did you play for England at half-back, Will?
I did, yeah. Well, I played about half an hour and then went to the home to wing, yeah, but I started at half-back, yeah.
So how does honing all that? Because you've got to guide a team, haven't you? You've got to play what you see to a degree, put your team in the right places. You're telling big lads what to do.
Yeah.
You're finding yourself, and then you come in and you play the odd game at half back, the odd game at full back, back at half. How did you find that until you nailed full back down?
Well, I remember when I was still playing at bowling, when I was coming through at bowling, I was like the organiser in a sense. I'd call a lot of the players. I was always on the ball. Whenever we had the ball in the attack, I was always on the ball. And then getting to Huddersfield, I was quite dominant then. I've always kind of been quite dominant in the sense, if I want the ball, I'll try my best to get it.
Yeah.
And I think that were kind of probably a contributing factor in the reason that I managed to do so well through the academy. When I got back into the academy, it went back into 3 years, so I was still playing with the year above me and the year below me. But I think quite a lot of players below me and probably my own age realised that I was trying to guide the team, and probably I earned a bit of respect by playing, not by, you know, you can earn respect a different way with different people, and especially through rugby. So I think that kind of earned me a bit of respect of just being our ego. When I were on the field, our ego, and I'm a competitor, I want to win. So I think that probably, it harnesses a lot of attributes as an halfback growing up, and wanting to be involved and being loud as an half and talking a lot like I do. It makes it my job. It's half your job. It makes my job a lot easier. And then you're learning week in, week out through high elite level coaches of how to become a better halfback, in the sense of learning different things and different moves, I suppose.
Plus, if one lad talks, mate, the next man might not be, but next to him might. So it's a domino effect, isn't it? Definitely. Everyone falls into line, don't they?
Yeah, definitely.
So, it doesn't define you this by any means, or for me, I think it was just an unlucky situation, but that, the famous tackle, mate.
Yeah.
So no disrespect to who it was on, I can't remember who it was, but how did you deal with everything that come on the back of that? And because it was a lengthy ban, mate, let's not mess about on it. It was heavy on you and that, and I've no doubt you got a lot of crap off people and you got a lot of good off people as well. So how do you learn to take the good with the bad and shake that sort of thing off?
Well, I remember obviously my first year in Super League, I couldn't have been lucky enough. I made my debut halfway through the season, and then I played every game. Obviously there were people who were injured and I were in a bit of form then, and I come into Super League and I managed to do well. So I played, I played 13 games on the trot. And I was lucky, and obviously there were a bit of hype around me. There were a lot of people talking about me on social media. And that's when, I think the end of that season, when Newcastle kind of became interested in me as a player.
Pretty early then, mate. Yeah.
So around probably December time last year, I was getting interest from NRL. I remember I had a couple of clubs that were interested in a couple, and then I had clubs in Super League and Union that were interested in me, and you kind of get a lot. I had a lot of attention for the right reasons then, and I remember like really like vividly my dad saying, "Look," he said, "you've got it going good now. It's going good, but everybody says the roller coaster of rugby league, it's up and down, and one day it can be great, the next day it can be awful." And he said, "Look, you've got to just be ready, because with the good comes the bad, and with the bad comes the good." And he said, "You've not had that bad yet, where you might be in and out of form, you're not getting the team, you've got contracts on the table, you're dealing with that stuff, you might have stuff going on at home." And I think probably the start of my second year was the toughest it's ever been for me in terms of just rugby and life. I had some family issues going on at home, and then I had the contract offer from Huddersfield that I'd not re-signed, and I were obviously talking to clubs, and I wasn't talking to clubs, but I had interest from clubs, and
you're aware of people keen.
I was aware of people being interested, and I were aware of like people giving me a lot of praise or a lot of stick on social media then, and I think it all just probably played on my mind a bit, and going into that year and making that tackle, it was just I can't really remember it, really. It were all a bit of a blur, but I remember...
It was fast, mate, wasn't it? It was quick. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's not it something was, just... that's pre-emptied. It just happened.
Obviously, it wasn't intentional.
No.
And, you know, and it was just something in the heat of the game. I remember the game wasn't going too well. We were getting beat by Hull in a game that we thought we should have been winning in. And I remember being young halfback. I didn't get picked for round one and I were annoyed at that. And then I got managed to get in for round two or three against Wigan, but I played awful. I got spotted all game. I didn't make my tackles. Didn't show anything in attack. But it's what happens when you get found out. I suppose you get people do the video on you and you get realised.
And I don't think it's everyone. Sorry to interrupt you, Will. I don't think it's found out, mate. I just think we have them games, don't we?
You can try too hard, can't you, mate?
You can overtry. You can overdo it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think obviously, like, with that comes the pressure. Like, I want in the team, so I wanted to be in the team week in, week out. I wanted to prove that I was good enough to play. So with that probably comes a little bit of pressure where I'm trying to overplay my hand a bit and try to prove that I was good enough. But I didn't probably focus on the right things that game. And I was lucky enough to play against Salford the week after because Theo pulled out on captain's run. He had a bit of an injury, a niggle. And I played that game and I remember playing really well. I remember coming off of getting a lot of stick and playing really well, and it got a bit of confidence back in me. And then that whole game, it was just tough. It were a grindy game. It were wet, it were cold, it were tough. And obviously the tackle happened. It were unintentional, but it happened. And those things, rugby sometimes, it just can just go wrong. And obviously after I got the red card and it all blew up on Twitter. And then I got the ban for 10 weeks, which were tough. And you know, I remember deleting Twitter and Instagram when the ban happened because I was getting loads of stick, mate. And it's the stuff obviously you don't see as fans, but it's the stuff I never experienced as a player. And obviously my dad had warned me because he'd been through similar positions and situations, but it's something you can't really know until it happens to you. And
you can't prep for it.
You can't prepare for it, yeah, mate. Definitely you've hit the nail on the head there.
And it's probably the only thing you can't prep for, Will, in the elite environment, innit?
Yeah, definitely. And I remember, obviously, I got the 10-game ban, which were, I think I did 10, so I did 10 weeks. I got flogged for 10 weeks. I remember being two and a half months of just running, training. I'd come back in not in the best shape. That off-season, I'd played for the Knights and I got an injury on my ankle. So I were rehabbing that injury and I put like 5 kilo on trying to get bigger, thinking that I needed to get bigger to play Super League. And it didn't work at all. I was overweight. I was slow. I want that fit. So I used that 10 weeks to kind of like a mini pre-season and got myself back into some shape, got ready. Oh, I wanted to come back and kill it. The boys were doing well in Challenge Cups. We were getting to we got to the final, and that final were falling on my first game back. So I wanted to just make the team again. I remember I wanted to just prove to everyone that I was good enough. I wanted to prove to my teammates, the boys that I had respect for. I wanted them to have respect for me by playing well. And It was mentally probably one of the hardest things I've gone through. But you know, I'm thankful for the experience I've had now, and looking back on it, it was something that I've learned from massively.
Yeah, well, life's a learning curve, never mind rugby league, mate, isn't it? Yeah, so if you don't mind, we go back a little bit. There's a few things you've touched on there that I don't think we should overlook, mate. So
yeah,
I'm not going to ask you what was going on, but was there a reach out from anyone when times were hard that you could lean on? Was there an avenue you could use to speak to somebody?
Yeah, I think obviously, like, I'm quite an open book in the sense that I do speak to a lot of people, but I remember just going through a lot of stuff, bad times, and Marlon Billy, the chief welfare officer at Huddersfield, did a great job with me. He's a fantastic person and someone who, you know, the club should hold as an high regard, and a lot of the players have a lot of respect for him. I know the coaches do as well, and he helped me massively in that sense with you know, speaking into me, and you know, making sure that I were good mentally and that I were okay, because it can be tough. And obviously, you have fans. Some fans reach out to you. I've got quite a small friendship group and my family, and they made sure I were all right in that time. But yeah, it was tough. Obviously, you have the people, the keyboard warriors, or the people who think they know it all and want to give you a lot of stick, but that just, you take it with a pinch of salt. That comes with the job that I'm in. It's an entertainment game, and you've got to make sure people entertain, I suppose. And everyone's got their own opinion. It's an opinion job, so you just get on with it, mate. I suppose you get on with what's going on, and you just got to kind of get through it, I suppose.
Yeah, we don't take the human element on, mate. That we you just get judged on game day. don't even get judged on your Monday to Friday training.
Yeah.
No one knows what happens when that front door shuts, but it's just never took into account, is it, mate?
Yeah.
Another thing you touched on was that great spell you had in that first year where you managed to put a run of games together. So is it something where, like you said, there's a lot of interest early from both sides of the world. Is it something where you feel justified? You know, that time when you felt you've had to prove yourself, you've had parents coming on at you, players, you've had this little, like, icon above your head, you know, like FIFA and that, when you've got you probably had that, innit?
Yeah.
And now you've managed to go, well, I'm Will Price.
Yeah.
I'm here. Is it well justified, and does it feel good when you've managed to prove yourself right, but to yourself? Because the others don't really matter.
Yeah, definitely. I remember I've never wanted to prove anything against my dad, because he's always been, him and my mum have always been the first two people to believe in me, and I'm sure they believed in me more than anyone. I just wanted to prove that I were good enough, that I am good enough, and that I wasn't just in the position I was because I were his son. A lot of people say that to me, you know, you're only here because your dad, or, you know, you won't be where you are because your dad. And I think that the games in Super League kind of just cemented that I were good enough, because, you know, people might be able to get you certain opportunities, but when you're there, you've got to prove. And I think I managed to obviously do quite well in that first year and probably prove to people that I were good enough to be where I was. And that was something I just enjoyed. I enjoyed that part. I enjoyed that experience and the opportunities I were getting. I enjoyed that because I remember just talking. I always remember believing in myself, but saying, you know, look, I'm going to be able to do this, and I'm going to do it. And it was something that I managed to achieve, and it was just something I were really proud of myself for. But obviously, that now looking back at it, you can't get stuck on that. And I probably got stuck on that at the end of that year. I probably took that a little bit for granted, even though I remember looking at every opportunity and being thankful and grateful. I remember just like you had not been through any struggle yet, really, in terms of rugby wise. And it kind of opened my eyes a bit this year and made me realise that, you know, it's not as easy as it looks, definitely.
Yeah. And on the back of that, mate, you mentioned nights. So just before we go into how the nights was, I'm quite sentimental, mate, so I'd keep a bit of stash or programmes. Do you keep anything like that? Or?
Well, I've got my debut shirt. It's all framed up in my bedroom. And I think I've got a few playing shirts from that year. I keep playing shirts, and I get shirts off different players. So I've got different players' shirts.
Yeah. Your man cave will be class when you're older, mate, won't it?
Yeah, I can't wait. My dad's got a millions in loft. He's kept all those loads in there. So I remember just thinking, you know, trying to get players' shirts or players that I played with who I respected and wanted the shirt, I'd take the shirts. And I never really kept all like that. I still kind of am, but I'm really superstitious. Like, if I wear a pair of boots and I don't play well in them, I won't wear them again for a game. If I wear a pair of boxers and I do a good game, I'll wear them until I have a bad game. Or if I play well and I've eaten a certain food the night before, and I'll stick to that routine. And it's just like my warm-up. I go and do my warm-up away, like my own individual, before we go out onto the field. I go and do my stretching by myself because it's worked. And I'm quite superstitious in that way, but I don't really keep anything like sentimental to me after any game, unless it's a big game, like a big game.
Right. So how was the nights, mate? And how are you told? Because I think everyone just presumes it's just a phone call. Yeah, you're in, you meet up wherever you meet up. How does it work, mate?
Well, we had some sessions. So, like, it's kind of similar in the sense of what I did at 16. You get a few players from all the different clubs, and you all come in together and do a session. But at the same time, we were doing a session with the first team mixed. So they had the England squad and the night squad mixed at the same time. So I was lucky enough to get invited to do them sessions, and then started doing, and then I got selected for the squad by Ballou, Paul Anderson. Yeah. So we were in that camp for a week, because we only had the one game against Jamaica, and that was a really enjoyable camp. And we went into the game, and obviously we had a really good game. The team were really good, and we had a team of great players with loads of talent. So it was a really enjoyable experience, and one that I look back on and really enjoyed.
Yeah. And then the year after, like you said, you were in and out the team. There was loads of like speculation, or like every other week about you on the mate. And
yeah,
I can tell speaking to you now, you're a tough character. you don't really let that affect you. And when you do, you're happy to reach out to people and you've got your course network, which is really good. But I'll just shake off speculation about you all the time. It must do you nothing sometimes.
I think obviously, like, the rugby environment, playing and training week in, week out, you kind of have to put it to the back of your head, because if you don't, it eats you up. And
yeah,
you're training every day, and obviously your teammates probably see it, or you probably see it, but you're there to do a job at the end of the day. I'm there to make the team. So I kind of try to put it to the back of my mind, focus on Huddersfield, focus on making that team, because at the same time, I want even making squads week in, week out. I want playing consistent Super League. So my main focus was to try and do my talking on the field and play week in, week out. And I probably didn't manage to do that. I maybe played two or three games and then I'd get hour in and out again. And I didn't probably play 13 games again like I did the first year. But definitely after the ban, I managed to come into a bit more of a form and get a bit more confidence back in myself.
Yeah. And that week building up to that Challenge Cup final, mate, how did you find all that? And I say to, like, you know, the older players I've had on that have been there and done it, sort of thing, you're on the verge of, like, blowing up. I understand that, and you're ripping it up here as it is, but it's not just an ordinary week, mate, is it? As much as you're trained to say it in the week up, it can't just be an ordinary week. It's a big occasion, and one you've grew up watching as well, mate, isn't it?
Yeah, obviously. So I came back, that was the first week back. So that was the first week back of my, I just ended my ban. So my ban had just ended, and that week was the first week back of me being able to be able to be selected. So I was like, it's a bit much to ask to play. But obviously we played Toulouse the week before at home. T.O. announced it to the boys in the changing room that he wasn't going to be playing. He said, look, I'm not going to play. It's not worth me maybe being out for longer. I think he pulled his calf. And then in that game, Russ had tweaked his hamstring. He was having a little bit of an hamstring niggle for a couple of weeks before, and then he tweaked it again. So I thought, I remember Chris Hill coming up to me after that game, and he came up to me and said, look, be ready, because you don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, I remember that week I was like praying that I was going to play. I never prayed for Russ to not play, but I was just like, look, if I get an opportunity, let me play.
Yeah.
And I'm just envisioning it in my head, being able to play on that field. And Watto told me I was 18th man, so I knew I was going to be 18th man. He said, look, Russ is 50-50 whether he's going to play or not. We don't know whether he's going to play or not. We'll find out by captain's run. That's when you'll know if you're going to play or not, by captain's run. So I prepared for the week as if I were playing. I prepared with the boys as if I were going to play. I'd drop in and out of the team on the session when we were running players and stuff. And but me and Russ were, Ollie Russ were like, there's me and him and a couple of other lads in Huddersfield who were like the younger lads who were all really close. But obviously, we spend time with each other outside of rugby. And I said to Russ, I said, look, mate, me and you are mates first. I said, we're mates. I said, I want you to be fit. If you can play, you play. But look, don't play if you're not 100%, because you don't want to make it worse. And I don't want you to end your season by playing this one game. I said, look, you've got all my confidence. You just make sure, if you can, you're ready. And then me and Russ, we room share everywhere we go. So if we go away for a trip, or if we play, when we play Catalan, me and Russ always room share, we're roommates. So that week, I was kind of just preparing him a bit mentally and myself a bit mentally, in the sense of just I wanted him to make sure he were all right. And then if I got the call up, I got the nod. I couldn't look and say, look, I should be playing because I've been banned for 10 weeks. I've not played. I wasn't playing that great before. I didn't really have any reason to go and say, look, I've got to play. But I was just there and thereabouts. If they needed me, I were happy to do that. But I was happy to just do my job to help the team. And captain's run came around. Russ got through, luckily. And went on to play. So I remember turning around to a couple of other boys and just saying, look, I'm going to make sure when warm-up comes, I'll do my best to make sure all the boys are ready and hyped and pumped. So that was probably my job that week. And just remember taking it all in. And we went to Tottenham and we stayed in this hotel, which were amazing. We stayed in like a 5-star hotel for 3 nights. And it was just an experience that I was like, some players don't even get that in the career. So you've just
exactly, got to
sit
mate.
How it is. And I loved every minute of it, to be honest, mate.
Yeah. No, it's like mega majority, isn't it? Like, I know you're pretty modest and that, but it is. You like to think players are like that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I've no doubt there's some that the dummy comes out they're half-assed training. It, that will happen, mate. It's the competitive nature in some people. Yeah. It's just whether they can differentiate being a team player or a selfish player at times, isn't it? So the rest of that season, mate, how did you find it? What were the standout moments for you?
We're going to remember. I remember my first game back after the ban. We played Catalan in Catalan, and that were ridiculous. It was boiling hot. It was like 35 degrees. But we managed to come away with a win. And I remember enjoying that game. I remember coming back and being like, right, I'm back. I'm enjoying it now. And then I probably didn't really start to pick up my form after playing a few more games until we played Warrington at home towards the back end of the year. And I scored a try and I managed to make a cover tackle on Fulis, Josh Fulis, who obviously mates me now, but I like to remind him that I got. I remember those little moments where you managed to do something that moment where I chased him down. At the time in the game, it was more important than the try, I suppose. And it was close. They were coming back into it. We were leading by like a try or two. But those little things, those little 1%ers that probably fans don't see, it's what the boys in the team and your coach see massively. And I remember just trying to do them little things right and making sure I were doing my job as for the best I could for the team.
Game changers, mate, aren't they? They're the respectful 1%ers that you all go on about that we probably ignore sometimes. So are you someone that does set personal goals, mate? And how do you go about finding your personal goals?
I do a lot of stuff by myself and a lot of writing, and I kind of look into that stuff. I think a lot of people talk about it, a lot of like elite athletes who've been there and done it, or coaches that have been there and done it talk about, you know, you've got to train your mind and you've got to be strong-minded to make it to the top. And it's probably comes through experience, and it's one that I'm just trying to make sure that I've got in my locker as well, is that I'm strong up here as well as being strong physical level. And I set myself short-term, medium and long-term goals whenever I can, and look at stuff realistic. You want to be hopeful, and I want to set out these great goals and, you know, win a grand final at the end of the year. That's what every team's goal is to do, and it's one that we're looking to do this year at Huddersfield. But also I like to set myself, you know, personal goals of make the team and just do the best I can, you know, really. And my goals change day in, day out. I try to take it day by day at the moment, training, and try better myself day in, day out at training, pre-season, and learn a lot more and do my
repetition. Well, things can change, can't they, mate? Things can happen, and so you have done great business, mate, this summer, winter, ready for the season and that. And I've no doubt when all the papers come out and that, you'll be up or in and around the top, people's top four, won't you? So how do you, it's a daft question really, because I know how players work, but the listeners and viewers might not. How do you keep it sane and natural within when everybody's throwing them accolades at you and them tags at you?
I think it kind of comes from the boys, the group you've got. I think Wattle's quite good at that in the sense that, look, you, there's no egos in the team. You know, lads like to have a joke and a laugh. I'm one of them. We like to, you might like to sort yourself up with, like, there's me, there's Jake, there's players in there that want to just talk rubbish, but you've got to train hard, and you've got to train hard definitely to make that shirt and to make the team. And a lot of the senior boys especially like to keep the group grounded, remind us, look, last year were great, we've made some good signings, but we're starting now from scratch again. We're not the Huddersfield Giants team that made the Challenge Cup final, and we're not the Huddersfield Giants team that came third last year. We're back on square one with everybody at 0 points. The season starts again, so that's gone. It's out the window now. And the boys that have come in have got to do their best to make the team and to make us better. But the boys we've got already have got to do the exact same. So I think the group we've got are definitely a really good competitive group. And along with that, all the boys get along real well, which is an add-on. It's great.
No, it certainly does help. And them moments in your pre-season, mate, and the moments that'll help you win them tight games, won't they, and swing them round and stuff. So, obviously, I understand this is going out a bit later than what we're talking, but your move's been announced for next year, mate.
Yeah.
So, how does that type of thing happen? Is it just like, is it a standard chat that you'd have when it comes to renewal? So, do they reach out to you and then you have to sit down and think, and what swings at Newcastle's way?
Well, obviously, like, since I've been young, I've always watched the NRL, and it's always been a dream of mine one day to go over there and play. And, you know, some of the greatest players are playing over there, and you can see the competition over there is just growing. It's getting bigger and bigger, and, you know, there's 30, 40, 50,000 at games week in, week out, 20,000 at games week in, week out. The Origin games are getting bigger. You're getting 80,000 at Grand Finals over there. And, you know, it's always one that I'm watching. I watch most NRL games along with probably most players. And that's no disrespect to Super League. It's just something that I enjoy watching and taking in. And coming, obviously, to the back end of my first year, I had, obviously, interest from numerous clubs, Super League, NRL, and a couple in Union, and I think I played 10 games that first year, and I was waiting for my new contract for Huddersfield. I was still on my academy wage and my academy contract, and I was like, look, I want a new contract, I want to be settled. And I had a couple of contract offers from different clubs then to offer to pay me out, which I turned down because I didn't want to do. And I said to Huddersfield, I said I want to resign. Let's sort this deal out. And I just don't think the deal ever really got sorted from both ends, where we were both happy. That carried on through pre-season into the season a bit. And then that's when Newcastle came knocking, I suppose. I met up with Clint Zammit from Newcastle earlier on in the year, and, you know, we've had a good chat about the club and the ambitions that it has moving forward. And you know, that kind of matched mine in the sense, but that's no disrespect to Huddersfield and, you know, the opportunities they've given me this year and definitely last year and going through. And, you know, I kind of said to the club, look, I probably won't leave early. I want to stay there and finish off my contract at Huddersfield, and kind of repay the club in general for what they've done for me. You know, the club and Andy Kelly give me a massive opportunity growing up, and one where I didn't really have much else left, and they looked at me and gave me an opportunity, and I'll be forever thankful for that and grateful for what they've done for me.
Oh, good on you, mate. And obviously, so before you go there, there's games to win and hopefully a cap or two to earn at the end of the year and mid-season, mate, isn't there? And so does that type of move help, though, in one, you're going with someone else? I don't know if it'll get him in bother, so I won't name out. I know it's announced, but do you know what I mean? Yeah. And two, that you already know a couple there. Like you mentioned Bailey before. Does that help, mate?
Yeah, definitely. I think I spoke to Dom and Bailey through the year, and we kind of spoke about the club just privately. I think they must have known a little bit that they were giving me a bit of interest. And it's just good to have people to know that if you're going to end up moving to the other side of the world, which is a big thing for a 20, 21-year-old lad, that you're going to have people that you know there, yeah. And you're going to be able to feel at home. So that was probably a big thing for me and for my mum and dad when we were looking at signing the contract with it, to make sure that I were happy off the field and make sure that I were going to be looked after in that sense. And, you know, Newcastle looks like, you know, a really good city that are massively love the sport of rugby league there, and they love Newcastle as a club, and the people look like great people, and definitely the people within the club look like the right people for me, people that, you know, are going to be able to show me support on and off the field.
Yeah, and if you're happy off it, mate, you'll flourish on it, won't you? And they'll get the best of you if you get the best of them. So good luck with it all, mate. So it's come to that time now, a few daft questions. So you touched on a few before. So any pre-match superstitions, other than wearing the boxes till they're on the last legs if you win it, the food?
I do. I've got, like, really badly superstitious. I'm trying to stop it now because, like, it's getting ridiculous. Like, when I first started playing Super League, I used to have tuna pasta the night before and on the game day, and now I have bacon and chicken pasta bake, just because luckily one time it worked. And stuff like that. I wear the same grip socks for the same game. If I played well in them socks, if I played bad in a pair of boots, I won't wear them again. And just weird stuff like that, and stuff that probably makes no sense to anyone. It doesn't even make sense to me. It's just stuff that goes on in my head.
Yeah.
To keep me, I suppose.
So the definition of this next word, mate, is different for everybody. So the toughest player you've played with and against.
I think tough, like, from just like as someone who I can relate to would probably be Ollie Russell at Huddersfield.
Yeah.
Like, as an halfback, you're a smaller lad, you get picked on quite a lot, you get spotted, and Russ is one of them players who's ridiculously tough for the position. You know, he gets his fit, he makes his tackles, he does his job. And along with that, probably Chris Hill and Chris McQueen and Luke Yates there, and probably Leroy. I could go on forever, but they're players I just love playing with that are tough, that do the hard things and do the hard things week in, week out. And probably playing against, oh God, if I can think.
Again, the definition's different, isn't it? It could be how they carry out the backfield. It could be solid. It's just whatever.
One that I probably remember the most is Liam Farrell. He's obviously been England's best back row for the past decade or so. And I remember when we played against Wigan, I played against him twice in my first year and then once last year. And I just remember him being really hard to play against. He gave me a nightmare all game. He just, the way he does his job, I don't think anybody else in Super League probably can do a better job.
Probably overlooked a lot, to be honest with you, because he's solid obviously, right through.
Yeah, there's some great back rows in Super League, don't get me wrong. But he's just one of them that I could just, he's just always hard to handle and tough to play against, I suppose.
Yeah. So, your favourite away ground, mate? And do you like the newer ones or do you like the older ones?
Yeah, definitely not Cass and Wakefield. Definitely not. I get stick everywhere every time we go there, and I don't like playing at Cass, but because it's like a garden shed. But I'd probably say Saints.
Yeah.
I just think like obviously growing up, I've kind of supported Saints. My dad played there, and I've always kind of supported them in Super League. But I think playing there, when I played there last year, we got smoked. But like the atmosphere, the Saints fans, they were loud. The stadium's great. The pitch is nice, and that's just one that I like playing at definitely. Or Headingley, definitely.
It's a popular one, Headingley, mate. Yeah, it's very popular. So, say you're out for a few beers, the microphone ends up in your hand, Will. What are you giving us, mate?
Well, I did one the other night at the fans forum for Huddersfield with a few lads, and it were an absolute shocker. But if we did it together, but if I did one by myself, I'd probably sing Amy Winehouse, Valerie. It's one that that sings out of my head. I did it when I did my initiation at Huddersfield, and it's just one that I can get over and done with.
Top man. So, I've not asked it this. I got asked it the other week on my one that I've done. But what would you tell a younger version of yourself? So a 10, 11-year-old going through what you've been through so far, mate, what would you tell yourself then?
I suppose just to keep working hard. I think that along with just that with every good is bad and with every bad is good. Everything will pass, everything passes, whether it's good or bad, you know, you can't get hung up on it. You go through tough times and you go through a lot of good times in life. And I think that's just one thing I've kind of learned now, especially going through some tough periods on and off the field, is just that everything passes and, you know, you're going to come out of it either way. So not to be too worried.
Take the rough with the smooth, mate.
Yeah.
Top man. So if you're willing to, I understand if you're not, because it you don't want to upset people, but a 1 to 13 that you've played with so far, mate?
Well, I've not really played with that many different players, to be honest, mate. Obviously, I've only been at Huddersfield, played for England. I'd probably say Tui. So Tui Lollery at full-back.
Yeah.
I'd have Jermaine McGilvery on one wing.
Yeah.
And I have some good wingers there. I'd have Matty Ashton on the other wing.
Yeah.
I'd have Leroy and Ricky Latelli in the centres.
Yeah.
I'd have Theo and Russ in the halves.
Yeah.
Chris Hill, one prop. Nine, I'd have Nathan Peets.
Yeah.
Ten, I'd have Matty Lees. Chris McQueen and Kai Pearce-Paul in the back rows, and Luke Yates 13, and then I just chuck a special mention in there. I'll chuck Ash Golden at 14 because that man can play absolutely anywhere.
You've been listening to Trot the Egging. Thanks to our sponsors, Bardell Sports. Follow us on Twitter at Trot the Egging and Instagram at Trot_the_egg_in.